We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The College Football Playoff Management Committee will consider expanding the current 4-team field to a 12-team format when it meets in Chicago this week, marking the first step in what could be another historic change for the sport's postseason. The proposal does not include guarantees for conference champions. Instead, it calls for the bracket to include the 6 highest-ranked conference champions plus the 6 highest-ranked other teams as determined by the CFP's selection committee. There would be no limit on the number of participants from a conference, and no league would qualify automatically. Last weekend, our Jed Drenning on Twitter examined the history of WVU football through the lens of a 12-team playoff format. He looked at polls following the conference championship games in a regular season, whichever applied, and for playoff seeding, he used the BCS poll college football rankings. In past seasons, before those existed, he applied the AP poll as a measurement to dictate seeding. From this, he determined which West Virginia teams would have qualified for a 12-team college football playoff. Listen to what Jed had to say coming up right after this.
West Virginia is a special place, but it's the people that make it special.
Honestly, it is the crowd, it's the people.
This is one of the great environments. There are no pro teams in the state of West Virginia. They love West Virginia sports right here.
This is the most underrated fan base in the country.
Grass Resource, state of West Virginia, is not coal. Grass Resource is people.
Join the climb today at WVUtimeToClimb.com.
Review what the College Football Playoff Committee is proposing, and then we'll get into how that relates to WVU.
Okay, well, for starters, the announcement came out last week that this is being reviewed. Now, this proposal, and we'll get into the specifics of the proposal here in a second, but the proposal will be further reviewed at their meetings in Chicago, which are later this week on the 17th and 18th. The CFP Management Committee is going to take a look at it. And what they're looking to do is expand beyond the current 4-team format, which right now are 4 at-large bids, right?
Right.
There's no automatic conference bids. What they're looking at is a 12-team format. It won't include automatic conference bids either. Instead, what it will do, it will take the 6 highest-ranked conference champions. Now, that's an operative term that we'll double back to. And in addition to that, the 6 highest-ranked other teams. Now, that 12-team format will be set up in such a way as to provide a first-round bye for the top 4 ranked teams And those top four ranked teams receiving the bye must necessarily be a conference champion. No at-large, no independents, so no Notre Dame. Notre Dame can rank number one throughout the course of the year, go undefeated, and they're no better than a five seed with this proposal, unless things change. Again, this is what's being proposed. Nothing's been passed yet, but there's a growing sentiment that some version of this will, in fact, be passed. We'll see. So that's what they're looking at. Top four must be conference champs. Top four get a bye. Now, one of the interesting aspects of it, and this is one of the most appealing to me, you take the first round will be played out between teams 5 through 12. 5 through 8 will host 9 through 12. 5 against 12, 6 against 11, et cetera, in a typical bracket format, okay? And they'll host them on campus. And that's a really cool dimension to this. Now, the second round, at least as been proposed, will not be. The game starting to involve the top four seeds, those won't be on campus. Those will involve the bowl system or some version of it, much like the CFP. Okay, so that's what they're looking at. Now, when you look back through history, you'll see the implications that some of these rules have on how things unfolded with different seasons.
Well, when would this start then? Would you have to start this in late November, mid-November to get this going, to get through that 12-team or the 12-team tournament, I guess?
Well, there's two timelines. First of all, they've even said that when would it start at large, it would be at least a couple years. You'd stick to the formula as it is right now at the 14 for a couple more years before you went to this. And if this model, in fact, got kicked in, they haven't really specified dates, but there's some considerations here, right? I mean, if you're going to be playing the first round of the playoffs on campus, it would follow conference championship weekend. So let's use this upcoming season in the college football. Let's look at West Virginia's upcoming season, the Big 12's upcoming season, just as some dates, okay? The Big 12 championship game, John, is slated for December 4th, okay?
Okay.
Now, the reason I say there's some considerations here, and those considerations are beyond football, you had to ask yourself on campus, is the school actually in session, right?
Yeah.
So look at West Virginia. Finals are the 13th of the 17th of December, followed on that Saturday, the 18th, by commencement. So what that does, it leaves you that narrow sliver of time, and you would imagine most schools are going to be pretty similar with with some negligible differences from a timeline or scheduling standpoint. But this would leave you that 1 week. So you have the conference championship game this year, December 4th. Well, you would have the weekend of December 11th to host that game, okay, whoever you might be. So you'd have to have a turnaround, I would guess, in these first round games, much like you do in an NFL playoff game, a short notice, you have a week's notice, you got to scramble and get ready to play that game. Now, the second round, it would make good sense to me if, in fact, that's how it's going to unfold. Again, part of this is just me speculating. But if you're going to start the second round, you could have those second round games on January 1st and have a heck of a New Year's Day, right? Or one of these rounds would need to be played out on January 1st because if you're going to involve the bowl system, that's obviously going to be a critical part of it. So the question becomes, you have the second round or the semifinal round on New Year's Day. I don't know what you do. They haven't really announced any dates. This is just kind of me speculating to see what things might look like. But the first round on campus, you want to have on-campus game with kids on campus too. So that's a consideration. And then the second round you take to the road. One of the interesting things, John, is right now with the current format, it's four teams, but it's only three games. Okay?
Right.
Well, 12 teams now means 11 games.
Well, so, you're looking at more moving parts for sure. And I think you're also looking at conceivably, let's say the 12th, number 12 team in that playoff would go all the way through. You're looking at what, a 16 game season for a school then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're adding more games onto that.
You're talking, we also have to address, you have the possibility of the conference championship game factored in. So there's a lot of football that can be played here. It's not without precedent. We all know that it's been done at the FCS level. We've heard that many times. It's not without precedent, but it would be very new to the Power Five, Group of Five structure.
You know, the thing I think that immediately strikes me is that the time is probably ripe because the bowl system had such a stranglehold on college football and with the way things transpired last year, this might be the time to do it, Jed.
And sometimes the bowl system has had this stranglehold much to the detriment of college football, right? It hasn't always been what's most healthy for the sport. Well, a lot's changed since those days, right?
Right.
That's not quite the way we view these things, but it's been kind of an upside-down system just insofar as, let's say your team does make the four-team playoff, and that's not to say this 12-team would even address this. Is it realistic to ask a fan base to maybe go to the Sugar Bowl for a semifinal and then turn around and go to Pasadena for the Rose Bowl for a championship? I mean, you don't have the fans' best interest in mind. At least you would have an on-campus consideration for one right. round. Isn't that appealing? But also that guarantee of the six highest-ranked conference champions, I'll tell you who this really in a big way brings to the table, and that's those group of five teams.
Yeah.
I mean, if
yeah.
you are a group of five team, first of all, if you schedule appropriately, you might have two or three qualified committee, right? But your schedule at large isn't going to be as grueling as that of a Power 5 team, just going through the conference grind of a Power 5 schedule, okay? But you now have an opportunity. Let's say you're the 16th ranked team in the standings following championship weekend, conference championship weekend in early December. You're a group of five team. Let's say you're Boise, okay? And you're a group of five team, and let's say you're ranked 16th. But let's say only five conference champions are ranked higher than you. You know what that means? You're about to leapfrog four teams,
yeah,
jump up
right.
to number 12, and you get in because you're right. the sixth highest-ranked conference champ. That's a consideration people have to think about here.
Well, I see a lot of good things there. One, number one, it keeps fans engaged, a lot more fan bases engaged throughout the year. And I can also see some instances where you might have a lower-ranked SEC team around that that could maybe go to Boise or go to some places like that.
Absolutely.
And really
absolutely.
Make it
That's
cool.
Fascinating. Take 2012, for instance, okay? 2012 was a season that had this – if you apply this 12-team standard to 2012, Notre Dame was the number one seed throughout the course of the season. But, of course, they would have slid to number five, so they wouldn't have got that bye. That's point number one. Point number two, you would have had five SEC teams that season in this 12-team format, okay, which is unusual, but it still can happen. But I think one of the reasons that they looked at this, first of all, why not an 8-team, why a 12-team, okay? Well, when you look at the powers that be, for instance, those in the SEC, well, they've enjoyed this, obviously. They've gone on a heck of a run throughout the course of this 4-team playoff, right? Well, they didn't want to give up those at-large bids and the possibility of getting an additional or second team in from their conference. If you go to an 8-team and you go five automatic bids and three at-large, well, all of a sudden, that's fewer at-large bids than we have right now with four, right?
Right,
so
right.
It's not as appealing to those leagues. So if you look at a 12-team, these six at-large, that's why all of a sudden it appealed not just to those that have been left out, but also those that have got a big chunk of this already. That
sure.
really appeals to them as well. And one of the things you have to look at from a recruiting standpoint, I mean, look, the most coveted recruits in the country, okay, the same teams are seeking these kids, right? And
yeah.
they want to play on the biggest stage for the biggest hardware. And it's become pretty apparent over the course of the first handful of years with this four-team format that it's a very short list of teams that realistically, year in, year out, have a chance. It's the same handful of blue bloods doing this. So yeah. what happens is these kids, more so than ever, have started to migrate toward this select number of schools, almost creating super teams, okay? So for the first time in history, you have the highest-ranked recruits in Texas, the highest-ranked recruits in California, leaving that area of the country to travel to play for one of the short list of teams that is always under consideration for this four-team playoff, right? That
yes.
never happened before. We've always had dominant blue bloods in college football. There's never been a period of time in the history of the game you haven't. But you've never seen the most highly recruited states with the richest talent losing all of their top kids to a select number of schools for reasons like this. So the thinking is, if you involve more teams, I mean, one of the national sports writers looked at this over the last 10 years. If you applied a 12-team format to the last 10 years, 44 different schools would have played in this format. So as you're bringing more schools to the table, obviously, through the recruit's eyes, that means more teams have the possibility of being involved in the biggest stage. That could impact things, too. It's not going to happen overnight. But I do think what you would see is over the course of a handful of years, these kids would start to filter to different programs rather than just the same five or eight or whatever it might be.
We'll have more from Jed coming up right after this.
It's almost time for West Virginia football at Milan Pushkar Stadium.
That kick is good! West Virginia wins it!
Don't miss your chance to be a part of a team.
Up the sideline, 25-30, 35-40, it's a fundraiser, there he goes!
Season tickets are on sale now at WVUGame.com and 1-800-WVU-GAME.
He's in the end zone! It's a touchdown!
Become a Mountaineer today.
Well, let's relate that to the thing that you did on Twitter and the interesting little exercise that you did of going back through history and looking at the BCS rankings and the AP poll. And how many teams, West Virginia teams, did you figure could fit into a 12-team playoff going back through the AP poll era?
Yeah, seven teams by my count. A couple others pushed hard and came close, but the seven that I had, the most recent of which would have been 2007. Not surprising, right? Even following the loss that we don't like to talk about, West Virginia at the end of the regular season following conference championship weekend would have landed at number 9 in the BCS rankings, which are the rankings at that point you would have used. And what that would have done, that would have put them on the road. Get this, on the road in Lawrence, Kansas, okay, to take on the number 8 ranked Kansas Jayhawks. Yeah, there actually was a time when Kansas played pretty good football. They won the Orange Bowl that year. The Todd Reesing team, right?
Yeah, I would say there would be more people at that game than all the games that we went to combined in the years we've been in the Big 12.
There's no question about it. And it would have been a fascinating matchup. We were number 3 in the country in rushing offense, obviously, with that crew. But Kansas had the number 8 ranked rush defense in the country. So a lot of things about that matchup would have been terribly appealing. But 2007 was one team. 2006, just miss. Finished 10-2, wrapped the season up. Jarrett Brown with his heroics against Rutgers, that triple overtime thriller. That was a pretty good Rutgers team, 13th in the country. Remember, that was a really quality win. But guess where we would have finished? 13th.
Wow, right outside.
Yeah, 13th, just outside.
We would have been in the A&M of that year.
Yep, that's exactly right. So you go back one more year, 2000 bowl year, we would have qualified there as well. We would have actually been on the road in the first round to go to Oregon and face a 10-1 very hot Oregon Ducks team. Not sure Mountaineer fans would trade how things actually played out with a Sugar Bowl win over the SEC champ for that, but that's what would have happened.
Yeah.
That would have been a fascinating matchup, seeing Slayton and White and that whole crew against one of those Oregon teams out there at Altman Stadium. And then you go back to the Don Nealon era, okay? Here's where things start to get really interesting. 1993, okay, unbeaten Big East champs. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the operative portion of that statement, Big East champs. So we finished at number 3, the regular season, conference championship weekend, et cetera, at number 3 in the Associated Press poll, which is the poll I would use here. This is pre-BCS era, right? So at number 3, as a conference champ, we actually would have stood at number 3, got the first round bye, and stood around waiting to see who we played in a neutral site for the second round. That, John, would have been the only time, by my math, in the history of the school, at least, again, since the start of the AP era, that West Virginia would have got that first round bye as one of the top 4 teams. So that would have been 1993. Go back to 1988. This was a crazy year by the standards of this 12-team format. The top 4 ranked teams in that poll, okay, the interesting thing, all 4 of them were independents, including West Virginia at number 3.
Yeah.
So what that means is none of them had a conference championship, so none of them could have stayed in the top 4. So all 4 would have slid out of the top 4, landing West Virginia at number 7. Here's something pretty fascinating, okay? It looks like we would have hosted Oklahoma and Barry Switzer and potentially Barry Switzer's final game with Jamel Holloway and that whole crew. So that would have been a pretty neat ticket at Mountaineer Field. 1988 being the only game or the only year in which we would have hosted a first-round game. Okay.
Yeah.
So go back to 1982. All right. Now, this is one that might kind of surprise you, the way things unfolded. Started that season off, obviously, with the historic signature win in Norman against number 9 Oklahoma. Followed that up with the big win against, Boomer Esiason's Terps, my first game at Mountaineer Field. So we were 2-0 and hot. We landed in the AP top 20, stayed there all year. By the end of the year, we would have landed high enough to qualify as well. And the first round game would have sent us on the road to face Danny Ford's Clemson team, okay, which at the time were defending national champs. Now, you talk about Mountaineer Nation traveling in spades.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Imagine the number of fans we'd have sent to that one. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So now you jump all the way back to the Pappy Lewis era, okay? And you're going to go with both the 54 and 53 teams. They both would have qualified. In 54, barely, we'd have come in by my math at number 12, sending us on the road to take on Notre Dame. That was the first year after the Frank Leahy era, okay?
Yeah.
And in 1953, we would have gone on the road to take on Illinois in the first round. So those are the seven in the modern era, at least in the AP era since, that I have. And again, some fascinating stuff to chew on, but also some of the fascinating things are some of the seasons we ranked maybe a little higher than you'd expect, came a little closer than we'd expect, and maybe some seasons we didn't come as close. Like 1969, of course, 1969, it doesn't help that we were a 9-1 team, right? But as a 9-1 team, we'd only beaten one team with a winning record, and that was 6-4 Richard. Well,
right,
that was
right.
Held against us, so we wouldn't have qualified. 2018, obviously, we controlled our own destiny, but the way things unfolded against Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, we would have slid out as well. Go back to 2016. You know, we were sitting at 10-2, 7-2 in league play in the Big 12. Number two ranked defense in the conference, had some things clicking offensively, but we wouldn't have qualified there either. Matter of fact, I think we were 16th by the time the smoke cleared that season. So it's just a fascinating experiment to explore when you look at this through the lens of what might be or what might be coming later this week. I think there are some exciting possibilities, and it's hard to resist looking back.
Well, I think the first thing that strikes me from what you researched there is the schedule helps us now, where in the past it really killed us in
True.
Terms of getting into that. And you mentioned that 69 team. You know, their mm-hmm. opportunity was at Penn State, and they played them pretty well and lost that game 20-0, I believe. And I know Carlin told me, he said that cost him the Sugar Bowl. The Orange Bowl. I think that was the year Penn State went to the Orange Bowl. But a couple of other teams that I think of off the top of my head that could have been in the mix but faded late was the 55 team that uh-huh. lost up at Pitt. Freddie Wyant hurt his knee, and they lost the Syracuse game and got knocked out. And the 84 team, Jed, I think they were in the top 10 in November and then had that collapse.
Those yeah,
were
that's
a couple of other teams that could have maybe been in the contention there, and there's probably more than them that are escaping me. But this is interesting. I think this is a really interesting thing here.
Yeah, that 84 team had that 7-1 start, right? But like
right.
we talked about, things kind of fell apart late in the season. We ended up regrouping to knock off TCU in the Blue Bonnet Bowl, but that's another season that it would have teased us, right? We'd have been sitting there at 7-1 coming down the home stretch. If we do this, this, and this, it would have just been enough to tease us.
Well, I'm interested to see what you come up with. You're going to put together a feature for everybody to read on WVUsports.com. And I might just piggyback off that and go back even deeper and look at some of the teams, pre-AP poll era that could have possibly been in that mix. There were some that Clarence Spears had in the 20s mm-hmm. that would have been good enough to get into a playoff, and maybe even one team that Mott McIntyre coached in 1919 that beat Princeton that could have possibly been in a playoff. So if you add the seven that you've come up with through the uh-huh. AP poll era plus those, you're probably looking at maybe a dozen that could have possibly been in a 12-team college football playoff.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that, John, and I look forward to looking at what you put together as well, because that barnstorming era is fascinating to me. But what's interesting is, you know, you're talking about maybe pushing a dozen by the time the smoke clears and we finish looking at this. Well, that's a dozen or so without really angling toward it. You know what I mean? I think there's going to be a strategy involved if, in fact, this is adopted, where you angle or schedule appropriately to try and push your way toward those top 12 for those reasons, where we're just flying blind and looking at things where this never existed in the past and just how did it unfold the way it was, right?
Right. Well, I think the net of this is this, if this goes through and it passes and flies and it gets adopted, I think it's a big boost of adrenaline to the sport myself.
Without question. I think what it does, it returns part of the regional aspect of college football. I mean, we like to indict realignment for crushing the regional part of college football, right? Well, again, just as I touched on earlier, from a recruiting standpoint, nothing's, hit recruiting, regional recruiting, with a harder blow than this four-team format, because the top kids are leaving their part of the country to go land at the same handful of schools that are going to this four-team playoff. I think over the course of time, that could change if some of those kids decide to stay closer to home and play for a team that will now have a realistic shot at being involved as well.
Right. One last thing here, I think, with this is the revenue boost that could come from a 12-team playoff. I think last year, I think all these schools that were looking at these massive deficits because of the pandemic and not having people in the stands and not meeting their budgetary expectations, I think this also may play into that too, which could possibly expedite this and get this on a fast track.
No doubt about it. We talked earlier, John, we go from 3 games in the entire tournament to 11. Okay. I think one of the pushes is going to be the interesting part to me. You can make an argument. If you're in that first round hosting that game, in some ways, maybe that's better than getting the bye, right? I mean, there's a lot of questions. Are recruits going to be allowed to be visitors for those games? I mean, we don't know the answer to any of these things, obviously, right? But the top four teams lose the home game and lose that home gate because they're only going to be playing at neutral sites. But again, you have to factor in and consider what the school schedule is going to look like. Are you in session? Are you not? Are you have kids on campus? Are you not? A lot of questions to be answered as we sort these things out.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be the devil's obviously in the details, and I'm sure that's all those things that you bring up, plus many more things are going to be discussed this week when they start hammering this out and seeing if this is viable. I hope it happens. I don't know about you. I hope it happens. I think it'd be great for college football, and keep our fingers crossed. Maybe it'll come to be fruition.
Well, I desperately hope it happens, and real quickly, here's why. I mean, you know, the detractors, the critics are going to say, well, you're pushing too hard or leaning too close to that everybody gets a trophy approach. And look, that's just not accurate. There's still just one trophy. There's still just one national championship. What might be changing is the number of teams who potentially have access to competing for that.
Right.
Anything that can remove the Olympic figure skating aspect of college football, or at least marginalize it, I'm all for. You're always going to have the human error and the bias involved. You're always going to have that. But as you increase the field and increase the number of teams, you at least marginalize that to some degree. And that's a very, very good thing, if you ask me.
Well, listen, you know, the net of it is that Alabama, or, you know, would still be the team to beat. But there's just another opportunity or another layer there that they have to get through to get that championship. And now they have the personnel and the depth and all of that to do that. But still, it just brings in another variable that they have to get through to get a national championship. Absolutely. And I think this is closer to having a true national champion in a sport when you have more teams and, like you said, more access, more opportunities.
Well, you battle your way through. All right. And they like to say that, well, if in fact that's the case, then play it out in the regular season. You have the same chances as Alabama. Well, that's not always true.
Right.
A loss can sting one team more than it can sting another. And that's the human dimension to this that you'll never entirely address, but this helps address it. And one more thing I'd like to get your thoughts on. Think about what this is going to do from a November football standpoint. I mean, one of the fears in expanding the playoff was you reduce the meaning of the regular season. We have the most meaningful regular season in sports. Now it's more meaningful than ever.
Right.
You're trying to jockey around and get positioning, get into that top four, get the bye, host the game instead of travel on the road for the first round. You're going to have more desperate teams playing November football games than ever before. Something tells me that the SEC is going to be dropping those pancake university games they got in mid-November now as we come down the stretch in November where everything's going to matter more than it ever has for those final handful of weeks.
Well, not only that, not only is November football more meaningful, but your season doesn't end in September and October now. You have a way to play yourself out of it. Before, if you had a big loss in September, your season was over. You had no chance of getting in the playoffs.
And that was the signal caller, Jed Drenning. Thanks for listening to this special Mountaineer Sports podcast.